Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ecology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com on this April the 23rd on the West Coast, now April the 24th on the East Coast, and in the central time zones of the United States of America. And I mean the Constitutional Republic. That's where we're broadcasting from tonight. I want to, first of all, extend my condolences to the family of our sound engineer and webmaster, Seth Hendrick, whose father passed away yesterday evening. We had a lot of technical difficulties, and I would also like to apologize to my listening audience for the interruptions that we had. Our servers went down, and my communications with the network went down a couple of times, and it became too much to handle and stay focused on a topic. The network had difficulty establishing contact with last night's guest, Joe Church. We're going to try to have him back again. It was a crazy night last night. And if you were listening to the show, you heard me doing a soliloquy about the financial corruption going on around the world, and I'm certain that probably had something to do with it. Now, does that mean that we're not going to tell the truth because the penalty you pay for telling the truth is having your communications knocked off the air? If that's occurring, then you damn well know that we are right on target with our message. You are hearing the truth, and they don't like it, and they want to stop it. Well, it's not going to stop. In fact, tonight we're going to bring forth some more truth. And I'm not going to really recapitulate what I talked about last night, other than to reference the financial corruption that I talked about, and the fact that it's going on to the tune of trillions of dollars, folks. This is not an exaggeration. A couple of nights ago, I had Don Harkins on, and he referenced how long it takes to count $1 trillion. A dollar a second, and it takes 31,710 years to do that. That's a long time, and there are thousands of trillions of dollars. Actually, it's in the quadrillions. If you can imagine $3 quadrillion, that's 3,000 trillion. And you want to add up the years or calculate those? I think you've got to add zeros to the end of the most advanced calculators that exist. And this is going on, and it's an international game of death that's really being played, and we are the pawns. Now, someone has to be pulling the strings of all this, and tonight we're going to be talking about who that is. And it just happens to work out this way that tonight's guest has recently done a fabulous article, which I've referenced on the show, in regard to a photograph that was published in Europe and made its way here to the United States to tonight's guest's website. And he wrote up an article after doing an analysis of photographs, and these are the real photographs of the individual that we're going to talk about. We may discuss my upcoming article. For all intents and purposes, I have finished part 6 of the Three Stooges Go to Washington, and I have asked for an independent analysis of the photos from a photographic expert, and I should have that report in my hands by noon tomorrow, and I'll be able to talk about that on the air. I'm anticipating that the entire piece that I've written will be on the website available for the whole world to see. And I'm pretty certain your minds are going to be blown by that, as well as tonight's guest and what he has to share with us. I welcome back to Evident Footprints the webmaster, the web creator, the researcher, the the editor of educate-yourself.org, Mr. Ken Adachi. Ken, welcome to the show.
Hello, Don. Thank you very much for having me back again.
Well, you got to hear part of last night's show. I'm sure you might have sensed something chaotic was going on. I don't know what you thought of the message that I brought out last night, but basically I was just sharing some material that was agreeing with what I've been talking about. It's kind of interesting from a variety of places. Any comments about it?
Yeah, I was enjoying the show very much. what you had to say was enlightening to me. There was new information that I was not aware of. It was extraordinary what you had to relay from Christopher Story's article. This was new information to me, and I was very interested in what you were saying last night. It's unfortunate the technical glitches caused, you know, shortening a truncation of the show. But what you did have to say is fascinating. I'm sure you'll be able to continue and expand on that, though, in either tonight or in other shows. So,
well, I appreciate that. You know, in light of the fact that they're ramping up all the different means of how they want to control us and silence us and that, I figured I'd ramp up my research and just bring the facts out as they come. So right. I'm probably going to go into a mode of delivering the behind-the-scene news that you're not hearing. Believe it or not, though, the mainstream media is getting pretty scared about what's happening because they're finding out that they're being left out to dry, so to speak, or hung out to dry, and they're not able to really compensate for what they've neglected, even though they've been told to neglect it. They're finding out that their taskmasters can turn on them as they turn on each other. And so there are references now to the corruption going on. There's a report that there have been 34, I may have mentioned this on the show last night. I've read so much stuff, I have to stop and think about what I said on the show last night. But there have been 34 arrest warrants issued from the top down, is how it's described. And our military is involved in the embezzlement. The monies are being shuffled. You're talking about trillions of dollars being shuffled from the Treasury to the World Court to probably the Pentagon and then to the White House. As I understand right now, the money is being hidden in the White House.
Wow.
We had this story that I referenced yesterday. The guy who was recently appointed the head of or the CEO CFO of Fannie Mae.
Yes, that was news to me. That was an amazing revelation.
Now the article I read an article earlier today about that that seemed to be much on target. It wasn't the usual fluff that you hear from the mainstream media. You hear nothing about it, if anything at all. 41 years old, he committed suicide, supposedly after having traced $50 billion, which happens to be the amount that the Madoff scandal is about, you know.
Yeah, right. That's
$50 billion traced from the U.S. to Israel. And what have I been saying about the real estate corruption that I have uncovered on the Internet? And names like Barack and Michelle Obama are in there. I've got hundreds of aliases for Michelle Obama.
Right.
Okay. And many for Barack. I haven't really spent that much time. You know, you find a handful of them and you figure that's enough right there to show. But I've been able to tie this to a Zionist faction, okay, run out of a Denver law firm, and many of the people that track you and me and Jeff Rentz and other people that run information websites that are putting out the truth are being hounded by these very individuals. And it smells Zionist. If it smells and walks and talks like a Zionist, it is a Zionist.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this happened to be directly related to the same type of thing. This is Fannie Mae is about real estate mortgages, mm-hmm. okay? And so they're taking these government program monies and paying off the Israelis with this money. This guy found it, okay? His name is David Kellerman. He was age 41, found hanging in his basement.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, now, there were the media, the mainstream media, was reporting that he had been shot. Maybe he was shot and hung. Who knows? Okay. And evidently, now Rahm Emanuel's name comes into the story. And, of course, his father was a Mossad agent, well known, going back a number of years, under Menachem Rabin's cabinet, if you want to call that, or Begin, some
Begin.
Pronounce it, okay? Menachem Begin, mm-hmm. and how's my Yiddish tonight?
Very good, amazing.
Anyway, they took the information about this connection between the elder Benjamin Emanuel and Begin off of Wikipedia as soon as Obama was elected. So they had to, he was forced to take that off of there. Obama, according to people, is just stealing money left and right. I mean, thinking, I got my hands, I'm in power, it's mine. Mm. Okay? Now, why is this important? Well, we're going to transition away from this in a moment here, but I've been talking about spiritual warfare, I've been talking about corruption, the father of lies. Satan is known as the father of lies, okay? Mm. You find Barack Obama is this mystical or Messiah, as they want to call it. And I have even words to say about that in my Three Stooges article. A couple of poignant statements, but I think as short as they are and as simple as they are, they're very direct and they hit the nail on the head. This guy has been groomed from day one. He's nothing but a fraud. And I'm going to prove it now in pictures. Not just in words, not just by examining his documents. And as you well know, you have seen many of these pictures yourself, and you've gotten to look at some of the text. You think I'm on target?
Oh, yeah, sure, absolutely.
Okay, now, in reference to that, you received a photograph recently, and it's Michelle and Barack Obama disembarking an airplane.
Right.
And as they're standing on top of the, what would you call it, the dais of the little stairway that they roll up to the...
Yeah, I don't know the correct term. I just called it a deboarding stairway. I didn't want to call it a ramp.
I've heard it referred to as the gangplank, actually.
Well, yeah.
And you know what? I wish that's what it was, really. But
no, technically, it is the stairway. But I don't know. I'm sure people in the airline industry have the correct name for that, but it's the one they roll out to the plane and they put against the door of the plane so you can mm-hmm. step up to a platform and come down the steps. So yeah, they're exiting Air Force One in London. Mm-hmm. I'm presuming it's at night, judging from the lighting.
Yeah. Well, this evening, and in fact it was probably about a half an hour before the show, I asked myself, okay, what do I want to talk about during, the show tonight? How do I want to introduce this topic, or what do I want to do? Often I'm prompted to pick up a book, which I did, and I picked up Fritz Springmeier's Bloodlines of the Illuminati. Opened the book to 311, page 311, and he's talking about a castle in Strasbourg where the Illuminati have these rituals, these satanic rituals, and these are very secret rituals. These are the people who answer to the reptilians. That's how it's described in that chapter. And
right.
I thought, how appropriate. Look at who my guest is this evening. I mean, you yourself have to admit that that's rather uncanny.
Yeah.
Knowing mm-hmm. what you and I both know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Recently, okay.
Right.
And then, so I went back into the index and looked up a couple of pages, and of course, he talks about accounts where there have been some what they've called disenchanted members of the Illuminati, and he tends to think or to agree with the fact that they have escaped and they're speaking out about some of the things that are going on in the plans. Mm-hmm. They want nothing to do with it.
Yes,
they've suffered. You know, growing up as infants and children.
Oh, yes.
And young adults through this
right.
perverse system of blood drinking and sexual deviancy and torture and compartmentalization of the personalities.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. Yep.
And if you're familiar, you are familiar with Fritz's work. If anyone in the listening audience hasn't read this book, I highly recommend it.
Oh, yes.
Bloodlines of the Illuminati. Just that, not to fearmonger, this is very factual about who these people are, how secretive they are, and what they do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was touching upon last night's show about what they're doing, okay? And it's always about power and money, so obviously I talked about money. But I used the words of others that have, it seems to me, been following the same path that I've been following.
Mm.
And been speaking about. They're writing about the same things. So I would have to say I'm pretty much on target. And I referenced a few answers that were given to a man who's referred to as Mr. Whistleblower, who's alluding to some things that I have as far back as 3 years ago maybe stumbled upon. Maybe it was intended for me to find those things out right away. But the UN is highly involved in this through an organization called the Office of International Treasury Control. And there's an individual that is like the one person that controls the world finances through that organization, and his name is Dr. Ray C. Dam. And he's been alternatively described as a reptilian. I find that interesting.
Mm.
The reptilians control the gold. I find that interesting. The Illuminati in Europe, particularly at this castle in Strasbourg, conduct rituals and they summon demons and they've even summoned Satan. And he's been described in Fritz Springmeier's book.
Mm-hmm.
Fritz was shown photos of this too. And he said he is a winged draconian reptilian or a Draco reptilian.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked about the reptilians on this show for 2 years, off and on.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a popular topic every night, but certainly it's come to the forefront through the work of people like David Icke, through your writing. Bill Cooper has written about it. Jeff Rentz certainly tackles the subject on his radio show and in a lot of the articles he posts at Rentz.com.
Mm-hmm.
And many other people. We're not the only ones that talk about these things.
Mm-hmm.
And you get this from outside, don't you? You hear this in the course of talking about abductions and mind control, don't you?
Oh, sure. People who are victimized or involved at a high level, particularly if they're associated with Illuminati families or they are from Illuminati bloodlines, will talk about this with people who are, you know, open to talk about it. They don't do it with everybody because they know they lose a lot of people when they go into this topic. So they just stick in those instances, let's say with a less knowledgeable audience or listener or interviewer, whatever the case is.
Mm-hmm.
They may or may not go into the reptilian stuff, only because they want to get out the message about the atrocities that are happening with the programming, the mind control, the satanic activity from you know earliest age forward, the you know the forced participation in many dark things. So they want to get that word out. So they don't even go into the reptilian and or the alien aspects of this
yeah
this deal.
Now from what I know and what I understand from and the perspective of others, and even Fritz Springmeier agrees with what I know, he says that the typical Christian faith or the belief of many Christians is that Satan gets to a person through their mind. He exerts his influence through thoughts. And that is true, mm-hmm. which is why you have mind control and brainwashing and propaganda. It's all, they're all, you know, sub-indexed modalities of mind control. But there are many other ways to enter into mind control, and through the physical senses and the physical body as well. I mean, you can toxify someone with a drug and put them under mind control with a drug. So, So physically, there is an attachment, and it's always overcoming the body or somehow tainting the natural processes that go on in the body, interfering with them, blocking energy flow, changing frequencies, and it's usually involving lowering the frequency, and so a person becomes susceptible to mind control through their health or through their general state of well-being or illness. So Satan can work through the body, but he can do it in other ways too. And they use images, and they use perversions, and they use drugs and illegal drugs and all other, you know, torture and all other kinds of unimaginable things. Shock, fear. Exposing children to things like smut films, or actually having them participate in the filming of these smut films.
By forcing them. Mm-hmm.
And what a lot of people don't realize, and this came through even in my interviews with David Hawkins and Field McConnell, talking about the Sidley Austin Tontine killings, which are run from, Michelle Obama ran that program for Sidley Austin. Mm-hmm. She trained the people for that. Okay. According to their research, that's their finding. They also make the smut films. You see, these are involving insurance contracts and huge payments to people. So when they insure these people and show the killing in a smut film, they cash in on it. So it serves a dual purpose. They get money for it, and they satisfy their perversions, their fetishes, however strange they might be. Now, that's how Satan works. So there is a satanic connection. And on my Tuesday night interview on RBN with Rick Adams, he came straight out and asked me the question. If you were listening to that show, you heard him ask, is Barack Obama a reptilian?
Yep, I did.
Yes, you heard that. And you heard me say something like, well, let's not beat around the bush. And I said, no pun intended. But from what I've seen, yes. From what my intuition and my discernment tells me, yes. And then Ken Adachi comes out with an article, a fantastic article. I think it's one of the best you've ever written. It's so simple to read, and yet there's so much truth in it. And just an honest, sincere analysis of one photograph picked apart into a million pieces, and each piece that you have so far put up on your site shows some incredible images, and yet they're real, aren't they?
Oh, yes. Yes. A lady named Sonia sent me an email, and I've had other people send me emails and sent me to websites that had photos of Barack Obama, especially, at different ages, to see, to just let me know they're there and to perhaps have a look at them. Last year, we talked a lot about this created, concocted, contrived genealogy about Barack Obama and his family, and you particularly had been doing so much digging in this area that naturally we're both looking around for photos on the internet. I tripped across some that you had not found, and you found some that I had not found, and We had exchanged those, and we just were talking about this. And one photo that was being published, now mind you, this is before the fall election of Obama, so he had the primary deal, the primary challenge, and then once he became the, you know, what we're told was the primary contender, and then he went into campaign mode, you know, for president. So during that period particularly, his publicity people, I presume, were behind putting up these photos that purport to be him at different ages, and this photo is, you know, he's with his grandparents, or what we're told are his grandparents, in one shot, and, you know, various ages. So that's when a lot of these publicity, and this photo was circulated very widely on the internet. It shows Barack at about 10 years old. It was about 1971. And he's sitting on a bench, you know, an ornately carved bench, wooden bench, in a room. And next to him is Stanley Ann, who we are told is mother, who's holding a little baby, supposed to be his sister, Maya. And the last person on the bench is Lolo Sotoro, and who was, we were told, married to Stanley Ann at the time, so therefore she would have had the last name of Sotoro, and the boy, rather than call himself Barack Obama then, he was calling himself Barry Sotoro.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the photo.
And Sotoro is the alleged stepfather, in other words, who adopted him.
Right, right. That's what we were told. So that's the cover story. So that photo appeared as a black and white photo. And that was sent around. I remember one place that I saw the photo and I downloaded it from was Jeff Frentz's website, along with other shots. And what you did is you figured out that it was originally a color photo that was desaturated of color, and you figured a way to reinsert the color into the photo. You did that. And we're talking on the phone, you know, typically daily about these discoveries. And when you did that, you said you think what you see are entities, you know, manifesting around him. The one on the wall pops out real fast. There's the one on. There's many of them on the wall that are very faint,
mm-hmm.
but there's one that was easy to see because it almost looked like a white headband on, and it's an entity. The face, the head of an entity that's manifesting on the wall to the rear and to the left of 10-year-old Barack Obama. And when you added the color, that the starkness between this white headband on this entity became more obvious because the wall itself is sort of, you described it as kind of a tomato red. Okay, so that one popped right out. So what I did is you sent me the photo with the color on it, and I just put it in Photoshop. I enlarged it, and then once you enlarge it, magnify it greatly, you start looking at Barack's hands, his forearms, his bare knees, he's wearing short pants, etc. These entities become quite easy to see, and then there's an entity that's appearing in the space between his legs. You can see it. It's back, the bench that he's sitting on is the background, but there's an entity manifesting there. So what I did is I, besides enlarging it, cropping out sections, enlarging it, then I start playing with the contrast and the brightness with these controls that you can use in Photoshop, and you start noticing that these entities can be drawn out in greater detail,
mm-hmm.
by taking advantage of the six or seven adjustments they have, which you can change the intensity of shading. You can change the hue of a color image. You can shift different attributes or parameters of color photography in such a way that you can draw these images,
mm-hmm.
that that it would be very faint. You can see it very faintly if you're looking for it and if you're aware of it. But if you're not aware of it, and when it's a black and white photo, you can't. You know, they won't be drawn to your attention. You're just looking at the cover story of the photo. You know, the three pictures, these three people. Oh, that's nice, and you go on to the next photo. But it's only when you enlarge these and in contrast enhance them, and adding the color really was a tremendous way to enhance the images. So this was back.
You remember when I told you about that discovery? I had enlarged the photo a couple of times myself, just with a basic viewer, photo viewer.
Right.
And I had remarked, if you look at the skin on his hands, you're going to see scales. Mm-hmm. And if you look at his knees, to me, it looked like he was in a sledgehammer fight and they forgot to give him a sledgehammer. I mean, his knees were deformed. And now, I'm not mocking someone who's deformed, but what was deforming them was the issue here that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And Lolo Satoru's arms, if you remember me telling you that I saw what looked like tattoos, but they appeared as entities as we enlarged those, especially when you did it, because you can do it so much better, you know, with Photoshop. You can really bring out the details.
Right.
And I just want to underscore again my reference to Fritz Springmeier and what he described. Satan appeared, and people don't have trouble talking about Satan. Christians don't have any trouble talking about Satan. Satan can appear any way he chooses. And in this case, Fritz is describing him as a winged Draco reptilian. That's the ruling caste of the reptilian aliens, okay?
Right.
Now, so those people who have trouble talking about this topic, keep in mind the reference to Satan, that they had summoned Satan and that's how he appeared.
Right.
So there's a connection now. There's a validity that gives us the authority to talk about this. And I really don't care what people think. You know, people are afraid to talk about this. They'll talk about evil, but they'll stop at a certain point. Mm-hmm. Evil is what it is, and it's the opposite of what is good.
Yeah.
And if you wanna find out what is good, you've got to balance the two, at least. And it's way out of balance. So, go ahead. I just wanted to make that.
Well, so what we're talking about here is that Kathy O'Brien, in her book Transformation of America, co-written with Mark Phillips, I think the book came out in 94 or 95. In the book, for those who haven't read it, she references a couple of occasions. She was what is known as an MK Ultra presidential model sex slave. That's how she was used. And she was in the White House. This was during the tenure of George Bush Sr., president from 88 to 92. And she had said that she, on more than one occasion, could witness George Bush Sr. transforming his facial features, transforming that of what looked like a reptilian-like being. And he's talking to her during this transformation. He wanted her to see that he had this ability to shift or shapeshift, as we say, manifestation. Now, in the book, because she didn't understand the true nature of what was, she thought she was witnessing some sort of advanced holographic technology that Bush had available to him. Because people associated with the regime there, Bob Bennett and Bill Bennett, who are brothers, one was the Secretary of Education, the other was an attorney.
Yeah, Bill Bennett was on TV this evening on Anderson Cooper's show on CNN.
Well, Kathy O'Brien was also, she reports in the book, she was in a underground facility below Washington, D.C., and both Bennett brothers, Bill and Bob Bennett, were, you know, she was, I think, she was being abused in some way. I forget how. I don't know the details. But they both manifested into this shapeshifted into this reptilian form. She reports it in the book, and she didn't know what to make of it. I mean, of course, naturally, she's frightened. Anybody would be. But to account for it, she thought it was holographic technology. She thought they had some sort of high-tech device on their person that they could hit a switch, and that to her vision, she thought they somehow were projecting a holograph and to make themselves look like these monstrous characters. That's what she presumed at the time. Mind you, the book was published in 1994. You know, she's writing it, you know, within a year or two or three after these events occurred. Later on in 1999, David Icke comes out with a book called The Biggest Secret,
mm-hmm.
in which the big secret of the book was that most of our political leaders, most of royalty around the world are not exactly just human. They have
and newscasters. Ability. Let's add newscasters, especially in Los Angeles at Channel 11.
Oh yes, but not limited to just Illuminati elites.
Yeah, that's right.
In the book, he centered on those because he was talking about the you know the Queen of England, the entire royal family. You know, Prince Charles, Prince Philip. In the book, Arizona Wilder particularly is reporting in Icke's book that she was called a Mother of Darkness. That's a very high position in the Illuminati for satanic ritual purposes. There's only three on the earth at any one time. And during this period, she, for many, many years, for a few decades, Arizona functioned in this role, in this capacity. So she participated in hundreds, perhaps thousands, of satanic rituals that involved well-known people, the royal family of England, many well-known politicians, writers, you know, most of the people whose names we see in the news at the time. She reported that she saw these people participating in these satanic rituals. And a certain number of them, not everyone who was there, of course, but a certain number of them transformed, shapeshifted into this full reptilian form, which is substantially larger than a human being. If you had to compare the weight, a reptilian is in the full form is low, you know, typically much taller than a human, a minimum of 8, but closer to 10 or even 12 feet tall, about 450 pounds. We're talking about someone who, you know, essentially looks like a 3D version of Barney, you know, the reptile there. They're big.
Mm-hmm.
And they, so that she reports, for instance, that when members of the royal family are beginning the participation in this ceremony, they usually have on a robe. Instead of wearing, you know, clothes, they have a robe, a loose-fitting robe. So they're in their human form in the beginning. And then as the satanic ritual progresses, you know, humans are killed and these, you know, babies, children, etc., are sacrificed. And these reptilian participants particularly are very anxious to engorge themselves on the blood of the victim and on the organs of the victim, the viscerae, and especially the lower abdominal organ regions. They literally consume this stuff because they get off on it. And the victim himself is terrorized prior to being killed in order for them to produce a substance called adrenal chrome. Now, this has been reported by many people. First, it's in Icke's book, but if you see the videos that Phil Schneider did in 1985, he, too, in his lectures, talk about...
Oh, you mean 95, I think. Wasn't it 95?
Did I say 65?
Okay, no, you said 85.
Okay, you're right, 95. Yeah. That was the summer which he did all his videos. You know, his presentation at various expos and, you know, seminars and so forth.
Yeah.
So he mentions in more than one of his videos that this substance adrenochrome is secreted into the bloodstream of a terrorized victim, and that when these participants of these human alien hybrids consume the blood, they kind of get high. It's sort of like a cocaine high for them. So they really groove on it, you know. It's for them, it serves multiple purposes. First, it provides this euphoric feeling for them, but beyond that, again, according to victims who've talked to David Icke, reports in a book, Arizona Wild particularly, she said that consuming this adrenochrome allows the reptilians to maintain the human-like appearance.
Yes. Now, if I can interrupt for a second and interject something. Okay. When we had looked at the picture of, we haven't gone into it in detail yet, but the picture that you got from England, the first thing, I think you sort of rhetorically asked me, what do you think, why do you think they're shape-shifting? And I basically use this comment, they need to be fed.
Yeah, that made me laugh, but it's probably true, though.
but I'm referring to what you're talking about. Yeah,
right. So the need to have this blood. Yeah, yeah. I might recall since we're talking about it. I mentioned to you privately, but I'll...
Now, that's my intuition telling me that.
That's very good. Your intuition is often on the money.
But I've also read it after, you know, so I agree with what I've read, and I agree with what you're saying. Based on,
yeah,
on having first an intuitive impression of it.
Right.
So and others have that too. I'm not the only one, you know.
Oh, yes. Right.
Some people can sense it. You yourself can.
So let me remind you too that that Al Gore, when he was vice president during the Clinton administration.
Was this before he invented the internet or after?
Well, probably before.
I'm kind of joking.
Before he became, you know, the godfather of the green environmental movement.
Yeah. Before global warming, we know.
Yeah,
that.
Before global warming, he helped to bring on that. Okay, he somewhere along the line, it was discovered he was on a plane, and I don't know the circumstances of how this discovery came about, but someone discovered that he was carrying small containers of blood in a satchel, some sort of briefcase. There was a number of containers, I forget, three or four. How it was, who saw it, maybe it was a airline personnel, I don't know the details.
Are these like vials or a flask or something?
No, I think it was a more substantial size, like perhaps jars. And how whoever reported it, whether they could see him drinking this, but that was the report, however, though, that he had these containers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking, it's much more than vials. We're talking, you know, substantial, probably jar-sized containers, maybe thermos bottles for all
super,
I know.
He supersized it, is what you're saying.
Right. They were fairly large, multiple containers in some sort of satchel that he was carrying with him.
Yeah.
And this was reported in the news. And stories began to prop up, at least on the internet, perhaps even in mainstream. If you recall, because there was a number of these stories that he was, they used the word vampire, and that grew out of this discovery that people asked who'd have no idea about the subject of shape-shifting human reptilians, and they're asking themselves, why is the Vice President of the United States carrying around containers with blood in it? And so, you know, they're thinking vampire, you know, okay, he's a blood drinker. There was a number of stories, even in mainstream press, I'm sure they handled it jokingly, about Gore being a vampire, blood drinker. There was a number.
Now, is he getting this from blood banks, like in hospitals or clinics or labs or something? Do you have an idea, or is this...
Well, yeah, I'll mention that... We'll just segue for a second because I want to finish the point here. Stephanie Ralph, who has a wonderful website, her and her husband, Michael Ralph, have a great website. One of them is called Ralph.com. I'll spell it R-E-L-F-E.com. That's one. Another one is called Metatech.com, M-E-T-A-T-E-C-H, Metatech.com. She is very hip to this subject, very hip. She had reported that she talks to victims who have mind control, et cetera, the government operation, ex-military personnel who have been victimized and so forth. And she keeps on hearing, or had reported in an article that I put up 4 or 5 years ago, that below many, many hospitals there are in fact these subterranean alien bases, we'll call them, because they are absolutely feeding on blood that's available from the hospital. And that even she reported that Red Cross blood bank operations are also tied in with these kind of reptilian operational centers.
Yeah, well, in other words, when you're being paid, what, $9 or $12 to give a pint of blood, you're actually, you know, you're getting the short end of the stick. To these people,
yes,
they'd probably pay $10,000 for a pint of blood.
Right. If you recall, after 9/11, when I was writing articles in reference to the multitude of shameful things that appeared in public, one was the call. If you recall,
mm-hmm,
you know, the dust hadn't settled yet. This is within 24 hours of 9/11 having occurring. The call goes out day in, day out, around the clock, every AM station, you know, that in existence, newspapers, the Red Cross needs blood. This tremendous tragedy. Please help the families. Hey, no one survived 9/11. What do they need all this blood for?
Well, there was a lot of trauma, and the blood was supercharged with adrenal chrome at that time. Right?
Yes, right. But there is an example of... why are they mounting, so, you know, the person who's waking up to this story,
yeah,
why on earth is the Red Cross mounting this day and night pitch for blood following 9/11?
Yeah.
No one survived 9/11. They didn't need blood for anybody there, and yet this went on for a month, 2 months. The daily call for 9/11 would help anybody. Okay. So they're collecting blood for these unannounced uses. Not exclusively, of course, but a great deal of blood is being diverted to our reptilian friends who need this stuff. Now, getting back to the adrenal trauma story, when you terrorize the victim, he secretes this substance which the reptilian shapeshifters prefer versus just ordinary blood without this substance in it. Because this adrenal chrome gives them the ability to hold this masking. Now, I don't know the specifics, whether it allows them to hold, you know, without going through a lot of effort for a day, a week, a month, 2 months, I don't know. But Arizona Wilder says that things, meaning with the advancement of each passing year, now mind you, this book came out in 99, so Arizona Wilder's talking about her experiences in the 70s and 80s and the beginning of the 90s, I suppose, because she started to break from her mind control programming somewhere in the early mid 90s, somewhere around there. And so she had said, she had this long video interview with David Icke, almost 3 hours long. It's called Revelations of a Mother Goddess, and it's available. You can go to David Icke's website and get it. It might even be on the internet for all I know. But anyway, she says that the times are changing for these reptilians. So as they're, you know, we're approaching, you know, the New World Order takeover deal. Perhaps it has to do with rising frequency of the Earth and the solar system. That could be part of it. That they can't hold this
frequency
masking capability as well as they could in earlier decades.
Mm-hmm.
She says they need more adrenal chrome more often, therefore they have to drink more blood of a terrorized victim in order to hold their shape. And Princess Diana, before she died and she talked to her friends about Charles, had mentioned that, you know, that this guy would shapeshift in bed, you know, after he had fallen asleep. I'm just guessing at this, but I have to presume his adrenal chrome supply is low, and they start revealing themselves. Now, she witnessed this. Now, you can certainly see why, you know, the marriage went south when she realized she's, you know, sleeping with a guy who shapeshifted into a reptilian form.
Mm-hmm. You know, beyond, you know. Now, I want to come back to this, but I want to, this thought has entered my mind three times, and I think it, before I forget it
again. Oh, yeah, before I forget, go ahead.
It's related to how we respond to certain stimuli. Okay, and I want to propose something to you, and then in the sense of asking you if you've heard of this at all, because my take, and again this is intuition, is that let's pause for a moment and picture yourself talking to a person. You're trying to tell them what's going on in the world. You're trying to tell them about the corrupt banking system or the Illuminati or a certain kind of conspiracy or concentration camps or chemtrails or what they're putting in the drugs, the toxins in the drinking water, all these things, right? Pandemics, you know, vaccines, the whole nine yards. And you see their eyes glaze over. Can you really recall a time, other than when somebody's drinking or something, can you recall a time when a person's eyes instantly glaze over when you're talking about serious things of another nature? Let's say you're talking about a car accident that you saw or that you heard about, or some tragedy that occurred. You usually don't see their eyes glaze over when they hear that kind of news, do you?
No. Well, if you're talking about ordinary people, I presume.
Yeah, just regular, everyday people. You know, say okay. You think, you sense that someone might be open to hearing something you might want to share, you know, about what they won't hear on the mainstream media. Something, you know, that you've heard that you know is quite possible or may have experienced yourself, okay, or found and learned about through your research.
Okay, I guess what you're getting at is that, unfortunately, there's a very wide spectrum of awareness among the general public of the topic we're talking about here. And, of course, many more people are aware now that these things exist, reptilian human shapeshifters, than did 10 years ago. The book came out in 1999, so it's 10 years now since that book came out. Now, at the time, it was pretty shocking. I wouldn't have known about it either had I not read Kathy O'Brien's book.
Yeah.
I had read that book somewhere around 95 or 96. And
well, the point I want to make, Ken, is that when you bring this these topics up, that's when their eyes glaze. You never see their eyes glaze, you know, through other normal conversations. Only when those topics are brought up. Mm-hmm. There is a certain frequency of fear that people seem to go to that causes the same phenomenon in all these people. Mm. You know, and to me, what I'm going to postulate in a sense is, at least in offering you the opportunity to respond. To me, it looks like a result of subliminal programming that's occurring on a level, sound, sight, or, you know, vision, something that's entering the aura in a subconscious way or in an unconscious way.
Oh, absolutely. This is quite true. People, the whole world is being subjected to subliminal mind conditioning. And it has been going on for a long time. You know, the military had developed this. The Montauk Project is about mind control. It's about electronic form of mind control, not only for victims who are used as mind control assassins, mind control school shooters, not only for those victims who are directly programmed to function as an agent for this covert agenda, but the general public is being bombarded with subliminal mind conditioning via television, via movies, via music,
DVDs,
and much of it is subliminal. You don't know that this information is encoded. A couple quick ways to express how this was done in earlier decades. The level of technical advancement is more advanced today, but in earlier decades, I'm talking about even the 60s and 70s and 80s and 90s. For instance, in movies, or if you're watching a television, the subconscious mind can detects everything. So that an image, if there's, I forget what the frame rate is for movies, but you're, let's say it's a film instead of a video. If you're watching a film, there's so many frames that are sliding, you know, by on the screen per second. You see it as continuous motion because the eye connects these frames into a continuous series of actions. But actually, in reality, there's a series of still frames that are rapidly passing in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
If you were, let's say, watching a film, okay, on a screen.
Yeah.
That's what you're really seeing. Your subconscious mind can detect every single frame, every piece of information in every frame, but your conscious mind only picks up the collective of the, so you see it as a moving image and you record it.
It picks up the stream in essence.
Right.
And it's really only picking up segments of the stream.
Right.
You know, it's not picking up the totality.
Right. Okay. So now, because that segment looks like everyday reality that our eyes pick up, you know, we fall into believing a movie as really occurring. You know, we're sort of in that fantasy land. Your mind enters when you're watching a movie, particularly if you get absorbed in the movie. Okay, let's say one of those frames, I don't know what the number, 30 frames a minute or a second.
There are different frame rates. A common one is 30 frame.
Okay, let's just use that.
Per
30 frame second, I would
per
think.
Per second and non-drop is another term. Now, there are other frame rates that have both drop and non-drop, and what that is a timing issue, you know, for synchronizing equipment and stuff.
Okay.
We use that a lot in music, for example.
Okay, so you know much more about the technical.
Yeah, I'm mentioning that so that you understand. And now there's a different issue going on with theatrical film, which is worth mentioning, and in fact, I explain this in my new Three Stooges article. I go into a deep explanation of what goes on in the movie industry and television and radio and all multimedia, really, but in the context of how this information can be processed. In the movie industry, they jumped from 35 millimeter when they went to this widescreen concept.
Yes.
It required higher definition because the films were being embedded in higher definition. Now you have to ask yourself, what is the primary reason? Was it just to make better movies, or was it to contain more information? Well, when they jumped to 70 millimeter film, it's actually not all 70 millimeters is being used for the pictures, the images. They are using 65 millimeters for the film and the additional or the extra five, I should say, the film and the basic sound. Then the extra five or four surrounds sound, like Dolby surround or THX, and they can they create smaller tracks for these back rear channels, and there is also seven channels surround.
Mm-hmm.
It's less common, but. Now, what do you think they're doing in that? They're able to hit different times, so because there's a delay between the front speakers, the middle speakers, and the rear speakers, and the center speaker. Each speaker is creating a different delay. They can put separate streams of messages on each channel,
right?
Subliminally. And,
right.
And the mind can take that up. So I just wanted to interject that there is a technical methodology in doing it, you know, in delivering that.
Right.
So.
Right. So, okay, so what we're talking about the same phenomena. You can, if you took only one frame of a 30 frame segment of a movie and you embedded a picture of something that you wanted to subliminally have the audience absorb, it just takes one frame. Now, maybe they might even use two or three frames, but it just requires one frame. And the viewer will not consciously, but subconsciously see the information.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the case of Disney films, there was a number of exposés that came out somewhere in the late 90s on the internet. There was a number of websites that found these still frames in Disney, especially Disney animations, like The Little Mermaid, for instance.
The Lion King had some
pornographic
stuff for kids.
Right, exactly. They would embed, I saw one of these still frames of The Littlest Mermaid in which they show this animation of this Little Mermaid. One of these captured in which you see her with what looks like human female genitalia, hair and all, you know. And then another still frames, like in the stars, in the segment of the sky, in which the Lion King is talking to the. I didn't see the movie, but in which they're looking at the stars. One of these starscapes spells out very clearly the word sex. Sex.
Yeah.
So these messages, these subliminal programming cues, can easily be embedded in film. This happens on television. Same deal. You got a frame rate. In which stuff can be momentarily flashed, your conscious mind doesn't pick it up, your subconscious does. Not only that, sounds can be embedded that you can't hear audibly, but your subconscious mind picks them up. And Truot came out with a wonderful article just December of last year, just, you know, 4 months or so ago, called The Sounds of Silence, in which he went into great detail about the technology, and this is why he was warning people
not to invest in high definition
television conversion thing, because they have the ability to embed this sound of silence technology into high definition television, high definition radio, etc. So I mentioned in my own little remarks, don't buy into this conversion thing. Don't get your conversion box when June 12th comes and they switch over to high TV. Fine, it's not going to bother me at all. I no longer can watch broadcast television. I don't care. It's a garbage waste stream anyway. And I'll be happy to just view CD videos, videotapes of pre-recorded material, but I'm not going to, expose myself to that technology. So,
what kind of people would develop such a technology to use?
These people, because their goal is to take over this planet and to mind control the people on the planet. And so getting back to the main topic that, you know, we're talking about is that we have in this photo that this lady had sent me, it was a publicity photo along with many others of the Barack Obama's and his wife's trip to Europe. They went to England, they went to other European and on his whirlwind tour. And this one shot of them getting off the plane, taken at night, the photographer was shooting through some sort of probably Lucite type shielding, maybe glass, hard to say, but there are reflections in the photo that was published, so you can see that something is reflecting that light back. So it has to be some sort of clear see-through shield that he took the photo with. Now, because it was at night, because of the shield being in the way, and because of the reflecting light, these two, Obama and his wife, come out of the plane, and their eyes look like they're on, you know, they're like beacons of light. I mean, this is what got her attention. She called it, she says, they look like they have, quote, reptilian eyes.
Yeah.
So that's what started off the investigation. I just downloaded the photo. I put it in Photoshop, enlarged it. Looked at their eyes, but once I did that, though, I started to look at the skin. Oh, my God, and there's entities all over both of their faces and on her legs, because her legs are exposed. There's a lot of entities there. So I cropped them out, some of them, and I put them on that piece that I put up 5, 6, 7 days ago.
And when I saw the photo, you had sent me a copy of it, just the basic photo, untouched or, unedited, and I looked at the eyes, and I enlarged the photo so I could see the detail, and I said, holy mackerelandy, Those
right.
are those right. are reptilian eyes. And I'd never, ever, and I don't think it was, you know, pictures have been shot through windows and glass for years. I've never seen anyone's eyes look like that.
Yeah. We're talking about people who are human-alien hybrids. So under certain lighting circumstances, under certain conditions, these entities will manifest in even digital photos, which I presume these shots were, especially digital photos, pick up a lot of
detail.
Information that's normally not seen with the naked eye.
Mm-hmm.
This is important to remember. The people standing there who are welcoming them, you know, didn't see the sort of detail that we see from that photo in these blow-ups. This phenomena, these manifestations, you got to remember. First, we're talking about these people, if we can call them that. They have DNA of both human and reptilians in them, and therefore they have the ability, I'm sure, in private circumstances, to completely shapeshift into the reptilian form, much as Arizona Wilder described in her interview with Dave.
Or it could be as simple as them switching off several strands of their DNA to match our frequency. You know,
I don't know. I don't know the details, but I do know that under certain circumstances, these manifestations, at least the physical changes in a person's appearance, happen more readily. For instance, when a person who's a reptilian alien hybrid becomes angry, sometimes it starts manifesting. If they're perhaps hungry, it might manifest.
Or if they're on channel Fox 11
on Fox 11 doing a news segment, like Rob Olson did a year or two ago, when it's on YouTube, I did a story about it, in which he starts shapeshifting on camera. This is probably another reason why they're switching over to high definition TV. Probably they'll can have the ability to prevent the shapeshifting from being seen.
Well, I think it's seen on TiVo, to tell you the truth.
It could be, but under certain circumstances, you can see this manifestation more easily in photographs than in other circumstances. So that circumstances was right. The time was right. They were just finishing a long flight, maybe because they were tired, and maybe because of the shield itself being there, reflecting, bouncing this light back and forth, might have played a role in the fact that we were able to, I'm surprised that they even published a photo. I mean, let's say no one's even aware of the reptilian manifestations, but just, her legs look so dark and skanky, you're asking yourself, why would they publish this photo? Plus with the eyes. I mean, it was very fortuitous that it was published in mainstream pick it up.
Now, let's remind the listening audience, Ken, that we have two pictures now where we see Barack Obama shapeshifting. The one from Indonesia with the Lolo Satoro family, as we brought up at the top of the show, or toward the top of the show, and this one now, this new one.
Yeah.
So we're talking 37 years apart, something like that?
Yeah, naturally. If it's a human-alien-reptilian hybrid, then they're going to have these attributes for their entire lifespan. And just so someone who's listening to this recording will know, you can access these stories. First, you have a link on your website under your breaking news page.
I shortened the title because of the space, but it's Michelle and Barack Reveal Reptilian Baggage.
Right. So if they go to your website and go to your breaking news page, look for that title. They'll link to my website, to the story on my website. And, of course, if they want to go to my website directly, they can. It's educate-yourself.org, and they go to the link called Current News, and from there scroll down to the section that says Latest Articles, and starting there, scroll down 6 or 7 or 8, 10 pieces, I'm not sure where it is now, and it says Barack and Michelle Reveal Reptilian Baggage at London Airport. That's the title of the article. You can do a Google search under that title. You'll probably find it, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can tell you that the button I put on that page is really fast. On my site, you just click on that and takes them right to the page.
Okay. So your site, again, is how do they get to your...
I'm directlightproductions.com, and they click on Breaking Stories. You don't even have to scroll, most likely, unless you're using a 4-inch screen for a monitor or a telephone. You might have to scroll, you know.
Yeah, right.
But like an iPhone. If you need to scroll down, you go down, I think it's like the second row from the bottom on the right column. You'll see that there. Just click on that, and it'll directly
take me directly to the page we're talking about. And then once they're on my page of this latest photo from the London airport, I've embedded within that story a link to the earlier story in September of 2008 in which we talk about the Lolo Sotoro family photo. And there, too, you'll see plenty of shots, crops of Barack, of these entities manifesting on Barack's, you know, this is 10-year-old Barack, on his hands, on his forearms, and on his knees. Now, there are many more crops that I got that I've yet to put up. That was just part one. I was going to put up part two, three, and four. There's a ton of other photos to add to that. Anyone with Photoshop on their computer can take the same photo that, you know, you and I are talking about, can download it right from my site and do exactly what I'm doing. Everything I learned here, I just learned by trial and error, for one. I have no, formal training. This is just try things with Photoshop. I got this idea entirely from a lady named Barbara Krause Brown, who has a wonderful website called WeolawaPress.com. She's been doing this for years. She's been using Photoshop to reveal reptilian shape-shifting among our presidents and our well-known officials and our Zionist friends, etc. And she's a master at this. I got the idea from her years ago.
Mm-hmm.
There's another gal named Jane Tripp, T-R-I-P-P, who also has fantastic ability to pull out etheric images from photographs, and she gets amazing stuff too. But Barbara Krause Brown is just phenomenal in what she can do with Photoshop. So that's where I got the idea from, and I just tried pecking and hunting on my own with Photoshop, adjusting stuff, and I don't call myself an expert at all. I'm really an amateur. If I can do it, anybody can do it.
No, but
you just got to try it.
Yeah, you know, you and I have both been the recipients of photos of some very strange entities from people out there. You know, readers on our site or listeners to this show even have sent us stuff. And I've seen some pretty interesting, and I've got to show you some manifestations that I've seen. They may be 8 or 10 feet tall, beavers or groundhogs, dressed in all kinds of clothes, standing by a corral-style fence, leaning on the fence, looking at the person taking the picture, lined up along the fence, and orbs flying in front of dogs, and you know, and the dog is looking up at the orb. The dog is seeing it too.
Yeah,
you know. Unlike many of the pictures we've been studying, where it seems like none of the subjects know they're being photographed, even though they're posing for a picture, and they all seem to be looking in a different direction, which is very
the faked photos, the Obama faked photos that you're referring to.
Now, go ahead. So now you are seeing these things, and I found another photo, by the way. I sent you a new photo that I discovered today. It's actually from 2004. There's a very interesting, what I call the jaw hinge shapeshift. You have to see that. What happens to a shapeshifter when he or she is pretending they're praying.
Okay, yes, you told me about that on the phone. Yes, I'm looking forward. I'll study that after we
Yeah.
After we finish the show.
That is an interesting manifestation. It appears to be a singular one, at least, no pun intended, on the surface.
Yes.
But you can see a very unusual kind of, and it's a large entity. It actually looks like a gray alien, to tell you the truth, from what I looked at. Now, I didn't work with it. I did a cursory examination. I enlarged it maybe by 100%, mm-hmm. and I said, yeah, there's something there to look at. So I sent it to you, knowing that you would pull it out. And I'll attempt myself. But you see, these photos are out there. If you know what you're looking for, you've probably seen 100 of them already.
Right.
And what I'm doing and what you're doing is really studying the detail. In your case, you're not looking for some anomaly that has intentionally been put into the photograph to make it appear to be something that it's not. You're studying exactly what's in the photograph.
Yes, we're just magnifying
its own entity or its
magnifying and cropping the photo, and that's what we're doing. To draw out the detail of the entity, I'm lowering or heightening the contrast, the brightness of filters called auto level, color balance. These are multiple filters in which you're changing the intensity of some attribute of the photo, but that's not inserting information. That's just altering intensity for one goal: to draw relief, greater contrast relief. That's the goal.
Yes, yes.
So we can, therefore, when you draw out the relief and then you enlarge it and crop it, you can see the entity much more plainly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing to see what, you know, these entities that manifest, not only on their person, but in their space, in the space around them, in their greater aura. There's a great deal of this manifestation mm-hmm. taking place. It shows up on the fuselage of the plane of Air Force One, and so
yeah. Now, if I can interject something else in respect to the work that I have been doing and I am currently doing, I'm basically showing the photographs to be fraudulent in their nature, the ones I'm working on. And although some of the photos I have contain the same content you're talking about, mm-hmm. I've allowed you to present that information. There's no reason for me to repeat that other than to refer to it. But this is the aspect that people are afraid. Now, we can assume when we see the glassy-eyed person responding to this kind of discussion that they're reacting to their programming. And it's producing exactly the same effect in all these people. They respond the same way. Mm. When they're receptive, you don't see the glazing over of the eyes.
Yeah, you still have their attention. Yeah.
And it's not just the glazing over the eyes. They become agitated.
Agitated, right.
And they become very almost frightened or insecure, and then they want to get away. They don't want to talk. They want
to. Right. They don't want to hear it. They don't want to hear it.
They want to attack you rather than what you're saying.
Yes, in some cases, yeah.
Yeah, and I say attack you in the sense of, you know, you don't really believe that, or you don't think that.
Right, exactly.
You don't expect me to believe that.
Right, the response is one of incredulity, right.
Yeah, and it's always
the same
thing.
And mocking towards you for suggesting.
That's indicative that so many different people can respond exactly the same way, say the same things, and manifest the same physical, and you know the metaphysical vibe is there too. You sense what's going on in them while you're seeing it. So it manifests itself visibly, and they're expressing their thoughts and their feelings about it. And I'm not saying that because they are taking a stance that they're wrong. I'm just noticing that response, how exacting it is in all those different symptoms that you see, and their reactions. So I'm making this distinction for the listening audience, so that when you're talking about your photos, you're dealing with these phenomena that are occurring, not so much corruption of the photo because of manipulation. you know, in deception.
Yes, and the point of putting up this story with this, the doing the analysis and cropping on this photo so you see the entities, is not to frighten people. That's not the purpose. The purpose is to show people that a large percentage of world leaders, of Barack Obama, of Bill Clinton, Bush Jr., Bush Sr., they are not ordinary human beings. They have a combination of human and reptilian genetics, and they are Al Gore. They are shapeshifters, and it's a large percentage now of people currently on the Earth are of this group. It's not a, not only the elites that we see in the news. There are plenty of policemen, police chiefs, lawyers, judges, doctors, in all walks of life are these hybrids, alien-human hybrids.
There many entertainers, you know.
Entertainers. There is no category of, you know, of social intercourse that these folks aren't part of. It's a growing phenomena because their ranks have been growing. They've been, you know, they've been trying to breed, if you will, to really ramp up their numbers in recent decades, so that it's nothing to be frightened of. You need to be aware of the phenomena and not to be frightened by it and not to assume. The bulk of these people, even reptilian shapeshifters, are themselves victims of mind control. It's weird as this sounds, you aren't necessarily a willing participant in all cases. Of course, many are. Many have been, you know, they're walking on the dark side. They're walking with this evil army. And so they're enjoying all the perks, the power, the insulation from prosecution, etc. But they pay the price too, you know, when they don't want you, they arrange, you know, to get rid of you or suicide you or just expose you. If you're not playing ball with them, they'll do an Elliot Spitzer on you. You know, they have all kinds of ways to make life rough on you if you're not playing ball with them. So there's much comfort that goes along with playing ball and much discomfort if you rebel. And in all cases, you know, a mind control person doesn't necessarily know he's under mind control.
Mm-hmm.
And from his perspective, his level of awareness and consciousness, he may see himself as doing the right thing. This gal who has come out with terrific exposés about the inside action of an Illuminati family, her name is Savali. She started to produce her stuff on the internet somewhere around 2000, 2001, 2002, somewhere in that range. And I put her stuff up as soon as she started to post it. And Henry Mayhew has talked about her and others. The different people have interviewed her. Very good exposure. She does a very good job of explaining what's going on from the perspective of an Illuminati-raised family, because her friends, her associates, we're all Illuminati. She's part of an Illuminati clan. And she points out that none of these people, including herself, at the time that she was involved with it, she thought what she was doing was the New World Order. Good thing, wonderful thing, let's bring it on. And so you got to recognize that everyone who's doing this isn't doing knowingly, saying, yeah, man, we're with the devil, we're doing evil. Yeah, some do, yeah. But a lot of them don't. They think it's somehow okay.
Mm-hmm.
Totally brainwashed. Totally, you know, this happens to people who wind up in cults, you know? Guru so-and-so cult, and they get all mushy-faced because, you know, the meditation, the incense, and it's loving words, and everything's about love, and, you know, it sounds so they start going to these deals and attend the temple. I'm not saying all temples that do meditation fall into, but a lot of these...
Many of the Christian churches are doing the same thing, too, though, in a different way, you know?
Right. A lot of them fall into cult deals. So once you're deep in the cult, now the guru's having sex with every female in the cult, even though You know, he's saying now, you know, by, you know, you'll have a child of God, and he's bestowing this honor upon you so he can have a harem. And I mean, their minds become so twisted and warped once they get into it deep, you know. They don't even know it. They don't even know how deep they've gone off the off the deep end, to coin a term. So it's like that with a lot of people who are serving the Illuminati. Many of the people think this is the way the world should go. And, I mean, you hear it from, you know, you hear it vocalized by people like, you know, Henry Kissinger. He did a show I was put on YouTube three or four months ago. He did an interview with Charlie Rose, who's probably, I'm guessing, but Charlie Rose is certainly a mouthpiece for the Illuminati in his show. And he might be among this group. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Kissinger was vocalizing it. He's talking about the coming, you know, global world as something wonderful. You know, we're going to, this is the greatest lie that's ever been perpetrated, but he's perpetrating it on a large percentage of people who are mind-controlled, they're brainwashed, they actually believe this nonsense because they've been so deeply immersed, and it's reinforced with, particularly if they're the reptilian type, mm-hmm. they're very much into what's called a hive mind mentality, in which they, rather than see themselves as individual, they see themselves as cogs in a much larger wheel, and they don't mind being a cog, you know. Mm-hmm. That brainwashed, that the notion of individual expression, spiritual ascension, and all that doesn't even enter their radar screen. You know, they're part of this. So they feel, well, when the New World Order comes in, they're not going to wind up in a concentration camp. You know, they're going to be protected. You know, part of the protected elite. And many lower level minions, I'm talking about, you know, the people in the military, particularly career people, brass, higher brass in the military, mm-hmm. think that the New World Order is going to treat them with, you know, as brothers and comrades in arms when it goes down. No way! Same with the police yo-yos and the Homeland Security yo-yos and the FEMA yo-yos. The ones who are aware of the agenda, of course. I'm not talking about low-level people. But the upper, you know, the command level, they think they're going to be treated, you know, as a brother. No way. The very nature of this group is it's a top-down pyramid hierarchy. And look at Hitler's regime. When he no longer needed Ernst Röhm and the brown shirts, he just crushed them. He killed Ernst Röhm and just crushed the brown shirts when they served his purpose. They will do that to all these yo-yos that I'm referring to who help install the New World Order, who play ball now thinking they're going to be protected once it's installed. I got news for them. Mm-hmm. They're going down.
Yeah. Now, Ken, I want to comment before we end the show here. I want to comment on some of the crops that you did. Okay. That these were taken from Michelle's leg. In other words, and I want to refer to them by number for
okay,
you.
Okay, as you're talking, I'm going to come up at the screen. Myself.
And they're all awesome photos. Starting with crop A. A crop A is a monster of a crop. If I may say so myself.
That was a good find.
That's a doozy. But A4A reminds me of a toy I used to have when I was 2 or 3 years old. It was this little man about 6 inches tall, and it was made out of rubber, and he had a vest and pants, and when you squeezed him, his tongue stuck out, and his eyeballs popped out, and his ears stuck out. And this was this fabulous little toy. I loved to watch this thing do that when I was a little kid.
Yeah.
And the A4A reminds me of that, except there's some differences. This thing has like four protrusions that it's like a split upper lip, at least four protrusions hanging down, mm-hmm. In a very three-dimensional way. And the eyes are bugging out like that toy, and so are the ears.
Yes, yes.
Okay? Right. Now, there's an interesting thing. While you were talking, I was looking at these because I wanted to bring this up, and I was listening to you following what you're saying and seeing this imagery in these crops. Crop H sort of looked like almost like the mask that they use in the movie V.
Yes.
Okay. Right. It looks almost like a skeleton in a sense, but the mouth and the eyes and the eyes are very strange because the right eye is very huge and
yes.
and oval,
yes.
and the black eye the left eye is a lighter color, not as dark black,
mm-hmm.
and it you can sort of see a pupil, what looks like a reptilian eye in it,
right
And it looks like it's winking the eye, sort of. Mm. And then you have this bow tie of a mouth on that figure. Very. Mm. This is not pixel distortion, folks. This is an image that's embedded in this pattern. Now, looking at AW, and I could spend more time on these. AW, there are two images of two men I see there. And one has a receding hairline and a waft of hair over his forehead. He's the one on the right, and to me it looks like Bobby Kennedy. And I looked at the other one, and I said, well, who is that? And then I realized, well, it's a distorted version of John F. Kennedy.
Mm.
So have a look at that between yeah. now and the next time we talk. Another really interesting one is crop K, which appears to be some kind of a dog with horned ears.
Mm-hmm.
And all these images you see eyes, nose, and mouth, and that one I just mentioned looks very much like a caricature, but the one I going backwards to a crop AW,
yeah,
it looks like Bobby Kennedy on the right and John F. Kennedy on the left.
Yes.
Now there are some differences. You know, you can't say, well, that's not exactly him, but it really looks like Bobby Kennedy.
Right.
You know, the facial structure, the hair, where it's parted, how it's hanging over the forehead. And same with, we'll call them JFKs. Maybe you should rename that JFK-RFK.
Well, it's what you're talking about, though, is really, truly interesting. Your eye and mine, in looking at these crops, can sometimes see two images in when you look at it one way, and another time when you like reorganize your eye, you can another image will. So this is extremely mm-hmm. common with these. I'm calling them etheric images because I don't know what else to call them.
Now I see other faces on top
right.
of Bobby Kennedy's head. There's
right.
a
right.
set of eyes.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And very round eyes, beady-looking eyes.
Yeah, beady, right. I see what you're talking about there.
And
yes.
and what would be the tuft of hair has a face in it, too.
Mm-hmm.
You see? The top
right.
of the tuft of his hair, there's a green face, eyes, nose,
right.
and mouth.
Right.
And then at the bottom of the picture, from his cheeks are two eyes, and there's a nose on his chin.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a big smiley face. It's almost like a caricature,
mm-hmm.
somebody underneath.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like a stick man.
Right, right.
You can see arms
yeah.
out at the side. It's very strange how these things sort of merge with each other and superimpose
yeah.
themselves
right.
on, beside, above, and below.
Right, exactly, yeah. That we see that in the other photo we did with the Lolo Sotoro on the bench is that you get these multiplicities of images that meld within one another so that at a smaller magnification it might look as to be one head of a certain type of animal, and then when you magnify it much more you see what was one head might be four or five or six other animals that make up a collage, as it were, to give you that one head. That's so common with these etheric images. They in their own way, if you can crop them right, you can get what looks like a very separate head, you know, with very distinct features. And then in wider field and lower magnification, they become part of a, let's say, a larger head that looks a different, might be an
mm-hmm.
ample
We notice this in the crops we make of the sylphs and the clouds and the manifestation in clouds.
Mm-hmm.
This is a you know, a theme that seems to you know, carry through. And then if you want to continue to scroll down, is that the fuselage?
That's what I wanted to talk
images.
About.
Yeah, maybe we can go to those now.
I gave the one on the far right, is the third crop under crop A. I gave that the nickname, the Shroud Papua.
That's good. Papua, yeah.
It sort of looks like the Shroud of Turin, you know.
Yeah,
and then
right.
When, well, we got to call it something else, you know, it's on his plane, so it's the Shroud of Papua. So when I refer to that in the future, you'll know what I'm talking about.
So what first caught my attention to look at that was I saw the reflection, you know, of the metal. That's how I could pick up there was some sort of shield there that the photo was taken through. But beyond that is that you could see, even in the original size photo, you can see some sort of face manifesting in the light portion of the fuselage.
Mm-hmm.
So that when I darken the contrast in three stages there, you can see that's a fairly good size entity that's manifesting. Very distinct mouth,
mm-hmm.
two eyes, nose, the upper part, what you might call the upper head or the hair of this entity. Is going into the tan portion above. But then when I did an enlargement of that tan panel, man, there was so many entities, and it was amazing.
Yes. Now, the first crop you have under B, I've nicknamed Saddam's Oriental Rug.
Okay.
All
so
right.
that's the middle panel then.
That's the B, the first one. Okay, the big one.
Oh, B, down the crop B. Okay, I get you. Right, right. Saddam's rug on the wall. Okay.
Yeah, or I should say Persian rug. You know,
Persian rug.
I didn't mean Oriental. Yeah.
Right.
It's got a bunch of different faces in it. It's got a lion, lion's face, what might even be a baboon. The nose of the baboon is the right eye of the face in the middle of the picture. You know,
right.
It's really,
right.
really crazy how these things attach
blending. Right. You see that blending.
You know, and the way, now, that is that just an enlargement or, okay, you changed the contrast a little bit, but.
Yeah, to make them stand out, in most cases, after cropping them, I'll play with the contrast to try to get the, and the color and the hue, whatever it takes to try to maximize the contrast relief so you can see the image, you know. And
in some
cases, I had to lighten it and then ramp up the contrast so you can see the image more clearly, like that
now,
image
there's
that
an alligator in this thing, too. I don't know if you've seen it, where the white slit is from the bottom up to where it rises and ends. Okay, it makes a left turn, sort of, to the northwest.
Okay, are you talking about the metal object, the reflection of the metal object?
Yes, it's white in this
right,
image.
Right,
okay,
mm-hmm.
So you go up to the very top of the white, and right in front of that is an alligator.
Yep. Yeah, there's a lot of images that I haven't put into the piece yet. If you look on my, see the crops below, look at D. Look at D is the area you're talking about. You can organize D in a couple ways. You could see it as a human face in profile, in which his nose is rather straight and sharp, in which he would be looking to his left.
Yeah,
that's
or,
one way.
Yeah.
You can also organize it in which the image is looking at you. The nose is straight in front of you.
And he looks like he's sticking his tongue out.
Almost, right. If you can see that as a very wide tongue, right.
Well, not that whole thing, but right in the center. There's something that would be about the shape of a tongue. But it looks a little bit like a lizard tongue.
Yes, it could be.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, folks, we're talking about things that are showing up in these crops that he did off of a person's leg. I mean, this is there's no tricks done here. Basically, what he's done is just brought out the elements that are right there as a tapestry on someone's skin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, this panel is the fuselage of the plane that we're talking about now. the tan portion of the plane's fuselage is where we're getting these enlargements from.
Now,
it's next to Barack's leg. It's
yeah.
just adjacent.
They
to
just
Barack.
Get more intense. E and F are just off the charts.
<You know? laughs> Yeah, E is pretty interesting. I originally called it skull-like, but the more I looked at it, I'm thinking more like a gray. It looks very much like a gray.
It looks like a gray or the skull of a gray, you know.
Right.
And it could be something looking in two directions, too, because if you look at it at the eye in the center, or what could be construed as an eye socket, and visualize that as the left eye of a creature looking to the lower right corner of the picture, it looks like a squirrel with its paws up by its nose.
Right, right.
Yep. You know?
Yep.
I mean, these... and then F. F is
It looks like almost like two skull-like creatures, one with a whitish skull and the other with a greenish skull.
Mm-hmm.
And yet that greenish thing looks like it has more flesh attached to it.
Yeah.
And it looks like there's a set of pink false teeth floating in the air between them.
Yeah. I mean, and the one on the right looks like it has the nose of a bear.
Mm.
And the one on the left looks like it has the snout of a pig.
Mm. Yeah, I mean it's fascinating,
and it has ears of a hyena or a dingo, you know, with those big.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. The ear shape, right?
Yeah. Oh, I mean this is fascinating, and
it is fascinating.
We're looking at pure evil manifesting itself here at the same time.
Yes, if you recall that photo that I put up, again, it was something, it was I'm talking about the UFO photo taken with a cell phone in England. It was a story that I got from Jeff Rentz's site, and I went to a UK site, one of their main UK Telegram or something like that. It was just a little photo, someone with a cell phone camera in England, shot a couple UFOs. It was at night, and I downloaded that. It was a small shot in the original, and I enlarged it, and we talked about this a year or so ago, in which once that shot was enlarged and we were able to see, and by changing the contrast, about doing what's called inversions of lighting in the shot, we were able to see all of these etheric entities manifesting in the space between the two UFOs. Recall that.
Was it that long ago, a year ago?
Oh, yeah, it was easily a year ago. Might have been a year and a half.
My goodness, it seems like we just talked about it on another show, I think. But
yeah, I think you did.
Yeah.
You mentioned it. But yeah, the actual story, I think, was not from last summer, not the summer of 2008, but the summer, late summer of 2007. I think it was, I can go back and check. But
my goodness, I must have been under mind control all this time and not known.
if you recall, they were beginning the primary process in late 2007. So it was somewhere around there, so...
Well, I do five shows a night. Five shows a night. Five shows a week. Five nights a week is what I meant to say. Every week, for a couple of going on a couple of years now.
Yeah, it goes by fast. Yeah, your archives are starting from November of 2007. So, you know, it goes by fast, Don. You know, you're really involved on a day-to-day basis. So, when you're having fun, time flies. I could be wrong. It might have been the spring of 2008 on that deal then. It wasn't the fall of 2007.
Well, if I discover that show, I'll let you know the exact date. But I know we've discussed it a few times.
Yeah. You know, what I should do is I'll find that article, and I'll probably put it under related articles for this one so people can take a look at that job, too. I think that was the first one that I really started to... find all these etheric images, and that sort of got me at least off the ground on looking for these things.
Well, we've given a couple of them nicknames during the show.
Yeah,
we've got Jack and Bobby, or we could call them Lee Harvey Sirhan. it really wouldn't matter. We've got the Shroud of Papua.
Papua, I love that.
And then we've got Saddam's Persian rug.
Yeah.
and I can come up with some pretty good ones on all of them if you want me to do that.
Yeah.
But it helps us, you see, because now when we talk about these, we have a reference. And really, you see these things. I mean, this is not imagination. You know, you get an adaptability to discerning what's in these things the first time you pick one of them out. Mm-hmm. And then as you become more adept at seeing them, you start to see them in real life, don't you? You start to notice them in some people you're coming into contact with or on live TV. And here, is an example.
Yes, right. I, for instance, yes, your eye becomes more acute. I've noticed that in originally I found etheric images by looking at enlargements of digital photos I was making of chemtrails and sylphs. Mm-hmm. And then you can see the overall sylph, but I couldn't see particularly the human faces, the animal faces, initially until it was on the computer screen, and I started enlarging it and contrast enhancing it. And now when I go outside and I look at sylph formations or even ordinary clouds, and even on a day when they're not spraying, I see many, easily see manifestations in clouds that I just wasn't, aware of earlier.
Mm-hmm.
They were undoubtedly there. I just saw it as clouds, but now I see many etheric and sometimes, I've told you this privately on the phone, but I'll mention it. Sometimes the consciousness that's manifesting there recognizes that I see them and recognize them, and they'll follow me with their eyes. I can see the image following me as I'm walking across a field, for instance. I'm taking shots from different angles and trying to get out of the way of trees and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll see the image actually following me with its eyes. I've taken some video of a sylph following me with its turning as I'm walking. You can see it turn and follow the camera as I'm going.
Yeah. Well, and we saw that at the baseball game that I described on a couple of shows, too. That same.
Yeah.
And it was a big one. Unfortunately, I didn't have my camera with me.
Yeah.
Now, I wanted to, before we end here, I wanted to bring our attention back to the first crops that you had done, which were the eyes. If we said that the camera somehow captured this frequency of light and projecting back off of the glass as a white flash, then it would impede their eyes. But would the flash necessarily just target in on their eyes? You see, it's not doing that.
No.
So it's the eyes responding to the light or the camera picking something that's there in the eyes. Now, at the same time, the pupils are white and rather, let's say, reptilian slits.
Yeah, it looks like bands, right?
Yes.
Looks like,
yeah. Yeah, and it's not the very thin, because of the distance, I think, but because when you start to decompress this photo by zooming in, what you're doing is introducing distortion that turns that into a rectangular pixel. And that's not intentional. Now, that's something I experienced, but you were able to open it substantially greater with Photoshop than I could with a regular picture viewer.
Yes.
And so you brought out detail that also shows why the center of the eyes looks so white. And that's because the sclera, or the white part of the eyeball, has turned black.
Right, which should be the white part of the eyeball.
Yes.
Has turned black. It's very easy to see on Michelle's eye photos, because both sides, left and right, of both eyes, which should be white sclera, are jet black.
Yes. Now, Christopher Story, the publisher and editor of the International Currency Review and many other intelligence publications related to the financial reality around the world for some 40 years. I think was Margaret Thatcher's financial advisor, maybe, it seems to me it was over a period of maybe 12 or 14 years he did that. I may be wrong about the exact number of years, but it was at least a decade. He was her financial advisor.
Oh boy.
And she had blue eyes for most of the time he had known her.
Right.
He described in his book, The New Underworld Order, having seen the black eyes of Tony Blair. Now, he's referring to this phenomenon here.
Yes.
Now, not necessarily the white, but predominantly black, through and through. Mm-hmm. And he described an anniversary celebration for Margaret Thatcher, or something about her retirement and an anniversary that was held at one of the, you know, the major halls in London. The name escapes me at the moment. You know, I don't know that it would have been Westminster Abbey or someplace like that, but you know, think of, you know, one of the halls where they have balls and fetes and that. And
okay.
If I come up with the name, I'll bring it back to the show when next time you're on.
Okay.
But he was at this event. He was invited by her to appear at that event, and she thanked him for all the years of.
Royal Albert Hall, perhaps.
Or it could have been. Now, I don't recall absolutely, but it may have been there, okay?
Okay.
It may have been there. But he remarked that her once baby blue eyes had turned to solid black. Now, this is a very discerning man in financial matters, and I also know that he's a devout Christian and quite often quotes Scripture in the context of the evil that he analyzes. Currently going on in the financial community. So we have this from a person who would generally be respected by people around the world. They respect his publications and his information. And he's writing about some very dark topics. And he's happens to be a very spiritual man. I wouldn't say he's overtly religious in a sense, but he is very strong in his faith and his knowledge of the Bible. And he seems to always be able to find scripture that applies to what's going on. So he well knows that this is a spiritual issue. He hasn't talked about what we're talking about in the depth we're talking about it. Mm-hmm. And some people refrain from doing that because there are those out there that wisely counsel us that we're approaching the limits of implausibility, and to discuss these things will destroy our credibility. Mm-hmm. Well, to pretend like they're not there is exactly what they want, or at least to create the illusion that if we see it, it's our imagination, we're hallucinating, or we're demented.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in reality, cameras are capturing this stuff. You see, and we're taking note of the fact that the camera has caught these phenomena.
Exactly. You're saying it's exactly right.
Okay. Though. So I didn't mean to hog up all that time.
No, but
I want you to give
good.
A closing argument or statement on that. And I'm sure this topic will continue on a future show.
It's wonderful insights you just recounted there. You're saying something that's quite true. Of course, they encourage dismissal by... You see, we have to remind... You know, folks are at different levels of awareness and consciousness about this subject.
Mm-hmm.
So that if you've been accustomed to, you've been recognizing chemtrails being, you know, sprayed for the last 11 years or so, and you probably, if you're following a website like mine, you've read and heard about sylphs, it's not such a big deal for you to accept that. So you start talking to other people who... start looking at you, you know, and pulling their head back. Whoa, you know. People are at different levels of awareness. I'm accustomed to this topic, as are you, because I became aware of this notion from Kathy O'Brien's book, which I read in 95 or 96. So the idea of that these shapeshifters are among us, it's old information to me, so I'm not I'm not shaken up by it. I'm not appalled by it. It's old, but it's new to a lot of people.
Yeah.
Some people, it's brand new, and those people are the ones who are easiest to
dismiss it.
To dismiss it because it's so they'll buy into it.
And us.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you know, I want to stress, Ken, briefly, that we're not mocking these people, or, you know, we're not chastising them. In a sense, we're trying to bring this to their awareness that they can they at least consider it. You know,
yeah.
We're not asking people to believe this. This is put in our face. It's flaunted too, isn't it?
Oh yes. I think that's part of it. I've been aware of the notion that they, meaning these reptilians, these manipulators, this New World Order gang, are increasing their exposure of who they really are. The day will come, I presume, or they plan to do it this way, in which they'll be openly reptilian. There are many people who are on television. There are many cases in which there are so many heavy-handed symbols of reptiles being thrown as, you know, that purple Barney is just one of them. The explosion of books about dinosaurs for children from let's say the mid or late 70s forward. If you had young children during this period and you took them into bookstores, you saw a lot of books about dinosaurs. Now, when I was a kid, there was a lot of kids' books, but I don't think one of them was about dinosaurs. Why? They want to acclimate you to the reptilian form. There's a guy who's very popular on Japanese television. He's a comedian. He's sort of one of the top comedians in Japanese entertainment. His name is Sama, and he's a very funny guy. He does many different Japanese.
His first name isn't O, is it?
No.
Okay.
It's Sanma. Actually, it's Sanma.
Sanma. I thought you said Sama because that would have been Osama.
I'm sorry. It's Sanma. Okay.
Sanma. Okay.
That's his name. He does a
Mr. Sanma.
He does a talk show. He has 15 or 20 people in this room where he does the talk, and it's very, you know, I can talk about that on another occasion. There's so many Illuminati symbols in that set. So anyway, but it's a comedy thing, you know, they're kibitzing back and forth. It's very enjoyable. But he holds in his hand, and I'll make a still of this and put it on my website. You see what I'm talking about. It's a strange thing. He's been doing this for years, but he holds an object in his hand. It has like a dowel attached to it, perhaps 3/4 inch diameter dowel, perhaps 18, 20 inches long, okay? And then there is the head of what looks like, and this is the killer, a reptilian alien's head with its mouth open, and out of the mouth is a caricature of this comedian. His name is Sanma. So in other words, and I'm sure the Japanese audience does not know what the hell that's symbolizing, but what he's showing you is Sanma is inside a reptilian's mouth. In other words, he's a reptilian.
Mm-hmm.
Probably a shapeshifter himself is what I'm saying.
Yeah. So what you're seeing is him inside the mouth of the reptilian.
It definitely looks like a typical cartoon reptilian. When they start the show, they have the animation is at the beginning of the show, you know, before you actually see the people, they're just rolling up the credits, the name of the show, etc. They show like a medieval type castle in the background, and these full reptilian, Barney like reptilians, green, are popping up on the screen, and they show the reptilians with a pair of sneakers on. They are telling you that this Sanma is a reptilian.
Yes.
And they're using that with symbols, and Japanese people haven't got a clue about this. They're putting it in your face. And wait till you see the stills. You'll see exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, we've run out of time, and as much as I'd like to continue this discussion, I mean, it's off the charts tonight.
Yeah, we've had a long show. Yeah.
And we want to thank Don Newsom for doing the sound. It's been excellent tonight, and also for allowing us to go overboard here. we have to revisit this this topic again, and we're going to have you back soon on the show so that we can do that. And I want to remind people they can go to your website if you want to give out that web address again, and any contact information or instructions on how to contact you, let's say.
Yeah, the website, educate-yourself.org, O-R-G, educate-yourself.org. And once you get there, click on Current News. And from Current News, you can see this article that I'm referring to. Scroll down the latest articles, you'll find it, and the other stuff that I posted on latest articles. Contact, I have a contact link. It says contact us. Just click it on. It'll take you to a box. You fill it in, and you can send me a message that way.
Now, you're on again on the 29th, which is...
Yeah, I'll be on again next week,
So maybe we can pick this up. There's certainly going to be a lot of chatter on the Internet about... these types of photos and some others within the next day, hopefully by tomorrow.
Yes, right, right. You have some surprises coming.
We're waiting on a surprise. So. And then, as a reminder, I have an independent looking at these photos, and you know, an expert in photography who's going to be doing an analysis of the photos themselves, and we're going to honestly come out and bring his comments out about the photos that I've written about in The Three Stooges Go to Washington, Part 6, Coming to a Screen Near You. And you've gotten to hear some parts of it. It's actually, even in some cases, entertaining. It borders on the ridiculous, what is in some of the photos.
Yeah.
And shame on us for not really seeing this, or I have to say honestly that I was looking for certain things in the photos the first time around. And I was basically taking the content in the photos and doing the research to see if these things actually occurred at all. Okay? And what I came to the conclusion that they didn't. That was my overwhelming conviction. Now, a lot of that is surmising something because there's a total lack of evidence. But the lack of evidence itself supports what I was determining out of my research. Mm. Now, when it dawned on me that if the documents are phony, the photos have to be phony, I approached that purely from a forensic standpoint of studying the content of the photos, which is the it's similar to what you're doing, because I'm blowing up the pictures and I'm trying to bring out certain elements that seem to be hidden, okay? Where these things you're bringing out they're hidden in their nature, and by changing lighting aspect ratios and that, you're able to enhance them, make them easier to see. So you're not adding content other than changing the contrast and making it, again, easier to see.
Right. Just the magnification is the lion's share of it. We're merely magnifying what's there, and suddenly you see it. Once you make it bigger, have an oh my God experience.
There's a point, what I'm getting at here before we close, that these intersect. Well, these phenomena intersect. But in a sense, it comes out through the process, in my case, of doing the forensic research to compare the facts of what's represented in the photo to could this have really happened or did it happen? Yeah. Now I'm in another place. Who is this in this photo? How is this person put in this photo? Because it became apparent, becoming familiar with the photos, not as a casual looker, but someone determining what feels so wrong in the photos. It's that they're artificial.
Mm.
Okay? So you're dealing with the real thing. And, right. I'm dealing with the artificial aspect, but there is content that reveals what you're working on. Mm. So it intersects at that point. That ends up being the common denominator between the two, you see.
Mm-hmm.
You're bringing out the nature of beings masquerading as people.
Mm-hmm.
And as difficult as that is for some people to swallow, consider your religious beliefs when you acknowledge the presence of demons and God and angels and other elementals that manifest in the angelic realm.
Mm.
It's time we start talking about this and bringing it to light.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and let's stop playing the mind games.
Right.
Okay. Ken, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. I look forward to your interview on the 29th. And want to encourage folks to go to your website, educate-yourself.org. There's tons of material on your site. It's like a library. And there's some interesting exchanges between some of your readers. On both sides, actually.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Your responses are gems many times. So I want to encourage people to go there. Once again, thanks to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. Seth is not on the sound this evening. Seth, again, we extend our deepest condolences and wish you well. Take your time. It takes a little bit of time, and we'll make do in your absence. Most of all, I want to thank the listening audience for tuning in. You have a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.